Welcome to the Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Oanda. Start your day with the latest business and city news and enlightening guests with Nick Howard.
A very good morning to you. It's coming up to 3 minutes past six. I'm Nick Howard. Thanks for joining me. Well, big changes are coming to the UK's banks this week. New rules are forcing the big players to open up the market to smaller challenges and to fintech firms. Open banking, which launches tomorrow, means we now have the option to keep our cash in one bank while letting these smaller firms use our data to offer clever services. It is a potentially massive change, but in a survey for which more than 90% of us hadn't even heard of it. So, on today's programme, I'll be delving into the reality of open banking and asking the big questions. What's changing? What does it mean for you and me, for businesses and for banks? And, of course, how safe does this mean our data now is? And of course, I've got some great music for you as well. That's all coming up on the programme today. It's Friday, the 12th of January.
This is the Business Breakfast with Oanda on Jazz FM. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.
So what will open banking actually mean for you and me? Is it something to be embraced, to be feared, or ignored altogether? Gareth Shaw is a money expert from the consumer group Which. He says this is actually an exciting time.
So from Saturday, your bank will no longer get in the way of you being able to share your financial data, your transaction history with third-party services that may look at that data and be able to analyse it and offer you good deals or aggregate all of your accounts into one place. How that's being done is through a data feed called an API, an open banking API, and basically you'll find a third-party supplier. Maybe it's an app that allows you to pull all of your accounts into one place. You'll say, I want you to pull in the data from Barclays or HSBC, and then you'll go back to your bank and you'll consent and authorise your bank to share that data, and it will go to that third-party app, and you should be able to see all of your accounts in one place. That's just one of the services that open banking is offering, but it could be a whole range of things. It could be a comparison site that looks at your real spending behaviour and says, we don't think actually, based on your real spending behaviour, you're getting the best deal with this account. Why don't you switch to this account? So it's about giving you personalised deals based on how you really spend your money.
Now, when it comes to our banking data being, you know, released into the wild for other companies to work in, however positively some of the effects of that that data being out there might be, I think, understandably, I would get a little concerned about who actually had access to that. Has the security of our data been looked at enough in this, do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's naturally going to be nervousness and anxiety about sharing sensitive personal data with perhaps brands and apps that you've never heard of before some of the bigger players get into this. I mean, your banking data says a lot about you, where you shop, your vices, your habits, everything that you're into. The way this has been set up is to keep your data as secure as possible. So every third-party supplier has to be authorised by the UK's financial regulator, the Financial Conduct Authority, and banks will not share your data with anybody that's not authorised by the Financial Conduct Authority and on what's called an open banking directory. So that's one layer of security. And because these services are regulated, it means you as a consumer have access to all of the safeguards that are out there when you take out a credit card or you open up a bank account. You have access to the Financial Ombudsman Service if you have a complaint. And if the company goes bust and you lose money, you have access to the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. So there are important consumer protections built into the way that open banking's been built and structured.
That was Gareth Shaw, money expert at Which. We'll be hearing more from Gareth in just a moment. But let's turn now to the banks themselves. Open banking is a response to a particular problem. We tend to stick with our banks in the UK, regardless of whether they're giving us the best deal. Switching accounts, after all, is not an exciting way to spend a Sunday afternoon. And despite the government pushing the industry to make the process as easy as possible, we do still tend to be wary of it. Back in 2016, an investigation by the Competition Watch concluded this means there's no incentive for the big banks to be more competitive, and as such, it's much more tough for new banks to get started. This isn't just a problem in the UK, by the way. In Europe, legislation known as PSD2, that's the Second Payment Service Directive, is also tackling this problem. The UK is bringing this in as open banking. That's where this has come from. The Competition and Markets Authority tasked 9 banks and building societies with opening up their data ready for the launch tomorrow. However, 4 of those only operate in Northern Ireland, and of the rest, only Lloyds and Nationwide are actually ready for the launch tomorrow. Here's Gareth from Which again.
Well, the challenge for banks is that they have big legacy IT systems, and this is a new change that they have to implement. So they have been given a deadline, an extension on their deadline to bring that in. But there is a threat to the traditional banking model here, you know. We think, given the services that have been launched already, it's going to be a relatively quiet start for open banking. But the potential is actually huge, and there could be well-known brands stepping into this that do banking better than banks do. And so I think the onus then is on banks to innovate and adapt to this new world and offer the services that can really keep their customers happy and give them the things that they could get otherwise elsewhere.
My name's Anne Bowden. I'm the founder and CEO of Starling Bank, a new entrant bank in the UK, providing current accounts and all sorts of services to help people with their financial lives.
If open banking is about breaking the grip of the big banks, then what do the new entrants like Starling make of it?
The important thing about PSD2 and open banking is all about providing a level playing field and giving the customer control of that data so they can make better decisions. And for us as a new entrant bank, it's pretty neutral. We have built the organisation. We have built the bank from the ground up with PSD2 in mind. We have built it for a world that's very different from now, where people can use their data for their benefit. But it will stir up the market because you will have people coming in, offering new tools and being far more competitive than the incumbents now are.
What are you actually optimistic about here? What are you hoping will come out of these changes?
The UK is the centre of fintech. We are doing some great things here in the UK. And that's because of previous versions of Payment Services Directive, PSD1, and now PSD2. We've had a great deal of innovation here. The opportunity of, you know, people like ourselves, Starling Bank, coming to market, offering new services and competitively priced services to customers. And also a whole range of new fintechs offering lots of services that help people with their day-to-day life. Looking forward, I think we'll see a much more competitive environment. We'll see the big banks having to improve their service levels, improve their pricing, treat customers much more fairly. You'll have far more people coming to the market offering various individual parts of the banking service where they will specialise and be able to provide the best niche product for that particular customer.
What do you make then of the implementation of this? So we've got the launch tomorrow, but many of the big banks aren't actually ready for that launch. And also in terms of the communication that is around this, I must admit, I speak to plenty of people and either they have no idea that this is happening at all, or when I do speak to them, the one thing on their mind is the security of their data.
I think communication has not been done well. I think a lot more could have been done to clarify some of the issues. This has not been helped by some of the timings of the introduction of the technical rules. If I sort of quickly explain really what's gone on, 13th of January, the implementation of open banking, which is basically the implementation of the Payment Services Directive in the UK. The technical rules don't have to be implemented until September 2019. So we have a very strange interim situation where some of the banks are ready, some are not. Some banks are not included in the Competition and Markets Authority order. So in the interim, you've got different sorts of arrangements for different sorts of banks. And in some cases, banks are actually telling their customers that they can share their login and passwords with these fintechs. And that's very, very dangerous.
Yeah, for years we've been told not to do that because it means that you're not protected. If something was to happen to your money, happen to your account, if your identity was stolen and you were a victim of fraud, how have we ended up in this situation?
It's not that the banks are saying that you have to share your logins and passwords. It's a question of the regulations. The EU regulations say that from the period of January the 13th, 2018 to September 2019, if banks cannot disadvantage customers that share their login and passwords, if they do not have APIs in place.
Is there a risk then that over this interim period, that if people are sharing their passwords and, you know, using screen scrapers while other customers are using more secure APIs to actually share their data, that a few scare stories of people losing money, losing their data because of these less secure methods will actually taint open banking altogether?
That's a real danger. If reading the various articles about open banking over the last 3-4 days, there's a tendency to scaremonger. There's a tendency to say that we're going into a more insecure world. APIs, authentication for customers, PSD2, open banking, all make things more secure for customers. But this interim arrangement of sharing logins and passwords is dangerous.
Anne Bowden, CEO of Starling Bank. In a moment, we'll return to Gareth Shaw from Which to ask what he makes of this potential risk. But first, here's your traffic and travel on Jazz FM.
On Jazz FM, this is the Business Breakfast.
A very good morning to you. I'm Nick Howard. Thank you very much for joining me. Throughout the programme today, we are examining the effects of open banking, which launches in the UK tomorrow. The new rules mean banks must allow customers to share their data with smaller fintech firms to open up the markets. And the competition watchdog and the industry have been keen to play up the secure API technology they've designed to protect customers. However, earlier in the programme, we heard how in trying to get open banking ready quickly, banks have been forced to allow password sharing while the new technical specs are rolled out across the entire industry. And that solution is much less secure. I put the issue to money expert Gareth Shaw from Which.
Yes, so there's two ways of getting hold of your data. The open banking APIs are the most secure way, but they're only going to be available on current accounts and only from the 9 biggest banks. That's what the Competition and Markets Authority has kind of forced the biggest banks to embrace this. But if you wanted to, say, pull your credit card data or your savings account data, or indeed data from a bank that's not participating in open banking, you'd have to go through a process called screen scraping. And basically what you do there is you enter your login details as you would if you're with that actual provider. And they effectively pose as you to take a grab of that data from that account so that they can show you what your account balances are. That's not as secure as open banking APIs. Screen scraping has been around for a long time with few problems, but it can open up other issues. You know, there can be malicious actors, fraudsters who are looking to take advantage of something new coming into the market, perhaps posing as a legitimate firm and then taking advantage of you sharing that data. So it's something to be wary of. It can also invalidate your bank's terms and conditions. It depends on the bank. But it's down to you to engage with that kind of thing. You know, if you don't feel comfortable with that, you're under no obligation to share your data this way. And indeed, when we surveyed consumers a couple of months ago, only 51% said that they'd be willing to share their data in this way.
I can imagine that after years of saying, don't share your passwords, you won't get any protection if you do, suddenly having to switch to being forced by the CMA to do that in some circumstances seems like something of a minefield for them.
Well, again, you're not forced to do...
Oh, sure.
The banks have had to change their terms and conditions. in there, they've said that we may not be liable if something goes wrong and you've shared your password because you want to participate in screen scraping. But I must say, screen scraping has been around for a long time. There have been services out there for well over a decade that have allowed you to do this. And there's a service called Yodlee that's had 2 million people enter in their details in this way with few problems. But there is risk that comes with screen scraping. You are sharing your login details to your bank account, and you are then vulnerable to malicious bad actors who could be trying to take advantage of this coming in and tricking you into giving your details to an illegitimate firm. So it's worth having that in mind and assessing the level of comfort that you have if you want to engage with this kind of thing.
Gareth Shaw, money expert at Consumer Group, which will be keeping an eye on this issue. But as Gareth says, read your terms and conditions carefully and don't do anything you're not confident about. One of the hopes behind open banking, which launches tomorrow in the UK, is the increased competition, which we hope will unlock smart ideas that big banks wouldn't have come up with on their own. Last year, the innovation charity Nesta ran a challenge with £5 million in prize money for fintech firms who plan to do clever things with data for small businesses and in turn boosting the UK economy. So I sat down with the Open Up Challenge lead, Chris Gorst, to find out what had been impressing him the most.
So if you think about what are small businesses short of, what do they really struggle with? And what we hear when we speak to small businesses is one thing is time, and the other thing is cash, right? So
the big two.
So on the time side of things, there are a lot of processes that take valuable time away from entrepreneurs that should frankly just be automated processes. So that might be on the invoicing side of things. It might be on the management of the tax affairs side of a small business. These are not the things that any entrepreneur gets excited about. They're not the things that they got into their business for in the first place.
Absolutely.
So at the moment, there are a whole set of problems here that the big banks, I think it's fair to say, aren't really tackling on behalf of small businesses. And so you've got a whole bunch of companies out there who want to take these problems off small businesses' hands. But to do so, they need to get access to the banking data in the first place. So open banking makes that possible. And then on the other side, so cash, right? So cash flow is the number one killer, frankly, of small businesses. It's not generally profitability, is actually just running out of cash. And so one of the winners in the challenge so far is called Fluidly. They think they can take a small business's banking data and help them to predict what their cash flow situation is going to be in the future. At the moment, you know, you've got entrepreneurs all over the place trying to do this stuff with spreadsheets. They might not have the requisite skills, and they certainly don't have the time to do that. So this is trying to do that for them. And it also enables them to take corrective action. So, for example, let's say they're going to hit a cash flow crunch over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Well, it's good to know that a few weeks in advance rather than the day before, so that you can take corrective action.
When we speak to businesses on this programme, it's often that, as you've said, the access to funding, the access to capital that sets them apart, the ones that are able to grow and develop. What about in terms of lending? But surely anything to do with businesses and banking, that's going to be a big factor here.
It is, and it's an area where a lot of innovation is taking place from financial technology companies. It's worth mentioning, though, that actually only about 20% of the UK's 5 million small businesses borrow in any form. On the other hand, the businesses that do borrow are often the ones that are growing. So they're really important to the economy.
And presumably, if more of those remaining businesses were to borrow, then they also could be growing. It doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want to. It may actually be access to that kind of system.
Yep, if they want to borrow, and if they're able to take on loans, then yeah, I think it does. I think open banking does potentially open things up. And what it does, you know, lending decisions are taken on the basis of data. And what open banking does is it makes that data potentially available to organizations outside of just the big banks. So if you are a provider of loans that has a slightly different perspective on what kind of risks you want to take from the big banks, this creates an opportunity for you. So actually, some of the participants in stage one of the challenge are lenders. They're trying to grow their small business lending market. So a couple of things there. One is them having a different risk appetite or taking a different attitude to small business risk. And the other is removing pain bureaucracy from the lending process. So we've seen some amazing demonstrations from participants in the challenge where they can take you through a process that lasts about 2 minutes to get cash into your bank. And there's no real reason actually why a lending decision cannot be taken pretty much instantly. If you can imagine, with open banking, you can provide your consent to share your data. The fintech's algorithms do their work in the background. That can take a matter of seconds. And then you can get the decision and the money transferred in a few more seconds. Whereas at the moment, you speak to a lot of small business, they talk about kind of cumbersome processes with their banks, having to go to them with paperwork and then waiting for weeks for a decision. I think that time is going to be over, actually.
Chris Gorst, Open Up Challenge Lead at the innovation charity Nesta, on some of the benefits open banking could be bringing from new players into the market. We are nearly out of time this morning, but I do have one more question for Anne Bowden, CEO of the challenger bank Starling. It has to be said that with any changes like this, the ones that have got the most to lose are going to be the big banks, the ones who've already got the largest market share at the moment. So they may perhaps be, you know, uncertain about whether they want open banking to do as well as perhaps it could. But what is your message then to them at the moment? You know, what are you saying to the big banks right now?
Well, the big banks are taking all this very seriously. Every single big bank I meet has an innovation department, has appointed a head of digital. They try very, very hard to keep up and to join this new world of providing better services to consumers. I think the impact on the big banks is not going to be that they won't copy the apps or they won't be innovative enough. It's that they won't be able to be profitable in the future. Because prices will fall, services will increase, and those of us that have better infrastructures, organisations that are built for this world, will be able to offer better services for customers, be able to respond to innovation faster, and above all, be profitable. Because these big organisations can't move fast enough, and they do take an awful lot of people and a lot of services to provide those old-style methods of engaging with customers.
A big challenge there to the big established players from Anne Bowden, CEO of Starling Bank. We'll of course be keeping an eye on how things pan out for the industry as open banking rolls out, as well as the impact for customers. It's 6:30 on Friday, the 12th of January. The Business Breakfast is back on Monday at 6. But in the meantime, for all of the headlines and to stay up to date throughout the weekend, head to the website. That's jazzfm.com/news. Thank you very much for joining me. Have a great day and a lovely weekend. I'm Nick Howard. Jazz FM Breakfast with Nigel Williams is next.
The Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Oanda. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.